Therefore, both the living entity and the Lord are called Puranjana. one pranayama for the deity is subordinate to the supreme pranayama. Therefore, the duty of the subordinate pranayama is to satisfy the supreme pranayama. That is the devotional service. Lord Rudra or Lord Shiva is the original acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya, called the Rudra Sampradaya. Rudra Gitanam indicates that under the disciplic succession of Lord Rudra, the Pratyajas achieve spiritual success. Om Yenatamandi Sadhana Shakana Chakram Tanya Tasana Shakyamayama Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhupada Shri Dekara Havashiva Sadhana Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Ram The great sage Maitreya said, the sons of King Prachinavari ruled the particular sun on severe austerities within the sea water to carry out the order of their father. By chanting and repeating the mantras given by Lord Shiva, they were able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the supreme personality of Godhead. So the sons of the king are undergoing austerity to carry out the order of their father. Very different from each other. This is, I don't know if anyone ever performed austerities after their father or their superiors have given them some orders. But this was standard at the time. The role of the parents, the role of the father and mother was of high esteem, especially when they were responsible for giving their dependents Krishna consciousness. So it is natural for the sons to listen to the instructions of the father as we see in the different dynasties. That the sons, before procreating and before expanding the population, they would undergo severe austerities and penances so that they could perform their duties as grihasthas, as progenitors properly. So austerity, as we know, it sometimes sounds like a very painful word, penance and austerity. It sometimes gives us a crippling effect or a hiding effect. We think our pleasures, our joys are going to be taken away, everything is going to be dry and painful and just excruciating. That is austerity or penance. However, this austerity and penance that we are reading about here is in order to attain the greatest wealth, in order to be reinstated in our original constitutional position, where we awaken our understanding that we are such an another eternal with full knowledge and blissful when we awaken to that fact. So penance and austerity is necessary. And we all know that because we identify with the material body, we see the body as the real self, as the real individual, not knowing that the body is just a tool, it's just a vehicle. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a whole explanation given to help us understand the difference between us, the Atma, which is the body, the mind and the soul, which is the topmost form of who we are. And Krishna explains to Arjuna, Na jayate mriyate vākāraśim, na yānupa pāvata anākuyam. Arjuna nityasya svatiyam pranam, na hanyate hanyamani sarire. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existent, and pranima. He is not slain when the body is slain. So the basis of our spiritual practice, or the beginnings of us understanding who we are and in this world, is understanding that we are separate from the body, that we are inhabiting a body, we are going through life, we are trying to attain our perfection of life, and we are trying to ignite or awaken our dormant love of God. And by constantly reading books like the Bhagavad Gita, we are reminded about our identity. So it's kind of like we're in a state of amnesia or in a state of forgetfulness. There's the nice dream and there's the daydream. During the daydream we think we are something that we are not. So we are in mind, we are in illusion. And over time, over different lifetimes, over countless births coming to association with Krishna by some mercy and his devotees, we are reminded that we are actually parts and parcels of the Supreme Being. And therefore we perform the process of bhakti in order to help us remember that we are part of Krishna. So the false identification of the spirit soul with the body is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of the Srimad Bhagavatam actually. But there's one verse that I thought I could share with. It's Canto 10, Chapter 84, Text 13. Yasyatma buddhi kunapeshri datuke swadhi kalashadishi bhoma ishadi Yasyatma buddhi se na karhishit janis abhidhineshu sadiva gokara. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kingdom, who considers the land of growth worshipable, and who goes to the place of progress simply to take a bath rather than reach men of transcendental knowledge, there is to be considered like an ass or a cow. So this verse highlights the futility of living or going through life without taking advantage of hearing from saintly persons when we have the opportunity, but rather we stick to the body identification. So what is our austerity? We have a body, we have our senses. What austerities are we performing that help us? We're hearing here that the protectors, they were to go under the water and perform austerities. I don't think we can do that unless we are some type of miraculous fish slash human being. The water is not our natural habitat, nor are we advanced yogis. At least I am not an advanced yogi. I cannot go underwater and live. So we have different ways in which we can perform sacrifices and penance or austerity, and this is all to purify the senses, to rid the senses of the lusty tendencies. And lust, of course, means enjoying separately from Krishna, not so much enjoying the opposite sex. Sometimes when we hear lust, we're just thinking it means sexual relations, but lust means enjoying separately from Krishna, removing Krishna from our lives altogether and trying to enjoy his material energy or trying to enjoy his spiritual energy. That is lust. And as we hear from the Bhagavad Gita, there are three sitting places of this lust. I'm sure all of us know the sitting places of this lust. It is our
senses,
mind, intelligence. So the senses, we have our, the working senses, knowledge acquiring senses. This is the sitting place of where all our enjoyment, what you speak of the mind, which is like the workshop, where everything is constructed, deconstructed, organized, stored, to be continued, to be updated, rebooted, reinstalled. All these lusty ideas or perceptions or warped perceptions begin in the mind and they are infested in the senses and they're heightened in our intelligence and create ways and means to sophisticate our lust. Right? We develop technologies to sophisticate our lust. Right? We have our cyberspaces where we can enjoy our lust. These days you don't even need a form to enjoy. You don't need your sense object actually to touch in front of you. You can put something on and you can enjoy. You don't even need that physical human interaction, right? Just put something on and you stimulate it. It is a true story, though. But even if you take the simple things, normally you think you go to a person to get a massage. You can buy a chair, and a massage chair, you program it. There is no human interaction. You just buy it, you keep it in your house, press a few buttons, it does the job. No human interaction. This is sophistication when it comes to our lust, right? Our enjoyment. We don't even need that human interaction. We have our fancy gadgets to help that. So when they say that the sitting places of lust, you know, the body, the mind, the senses, it is, sorry, the senses, the mind, the intelligence, we can see how the intelligence is a sitting place of lust, because we maneuver so many ways and so many things to facilitate our sense enjoyment. So much so that we don't even need the physical sense of it. It can be simulated. And you have simulated lands where you can enjoy whatever it is you want to enjoy. So this is how powerful we can be carried away by our lust. What you speak of what the senses do, the things that we hear, what we see, what we touch, what we taste. And that is why the Shastra then advises us to perform austerities to purify our body, to purify our minds, purify our senses and our intelligence, because we've been using these tools to fuel lust. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. We have to kill the enemy. And the first time I read it in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the all-divine sinful enemy of this world, I was like, this is perfect. How did I explain it? It is perfect. The all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. I have never forgotten that phrase. I read it once and I was like, ooh, wow. What is that impels us to act as if we have no intelligence, as if we're not, you know, advanced spiritual beings? Thus, the all-around sinful enemy of this world, Arjuna, that can sway even the, you know, the mind and intelligence of a yogi. It is lust. So we have to chop down that enemy. We have to know what we're dealing with first. When you go in natural, it's not like the Pandavas just went in and said, all right, we have Bhima on one side, Arjuna, you go in the chariot, do your thing. Krishna, you want to, yeah, Parthasarathi, you drive, you do this, okay, let's go. We have God on our side, let's just do this. No planning, no nothing. We don't know who's on the other side, what formation they have. No, there was some tactics used. You're going to war, you're going to battle, you have to know what you're facing. You have to know who's on the other side, what are their strengths and what are their weaknesses. So simply when we're dealing with this enemy, the enemy of the state, the enemy of this body, lust, we need to know what is its strength, where is it hiding, where is it sitting, how does it hide its head, how does it manipulate it. We need to educate ourselves and see it for what it is. It creates so many variety that sometimes we even think, no, this is not lust, this is me taking care of myself, or this is me, you know, rising in my spirituality. You know, so many excuses, but no, this is not lust. I am feeding my soul. I am an incarnation. I am Shakti Chan. And these things do happen because there are personalities who will come and manipulate and try to tell the whole world that, yes, I have subdued my senses. I cannot produce anything magnanimous, although I am a supreme being. Anyway, that doesn't matter. I still consider myself an expansion of Bodhichitta, or whatever the flavor of the month or the year is. These things go on. So we need to see the tricks of Maya, how lust can fool us into thinking we are the source of creation, into thinking we are the consort of the source of the creation. This has been going on for such a long time. Like, I am Lakshmi. I am the consort from Here's My Knowing. It's going on. We may not say it like that, but we live our lives like that. We may think, I have one of the six opulences, I have extreme wealth, I have beauty, I have knowledge, therefore I'm extremely important and advanced. But we don't know that all these material things come and go, and they don't belong to us. Everything we have right now is on loan, actually. We're renting out this body at some point. Everything, all these elements, are going to go back to Bhumi Devi. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. The elements don't belong to us either. So we've been given an eternal body to facilitate material desires that were created by a false concept of the self, or that were created by wanting to endure separately from Krishna. So because of all of that, all of this has been created to facilitate the lusty mentality, which is trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. And to undo that entireness, we have to perform austerities that purify the senses. Because it is the same senses that were using to forget Krishna and to try to enjoy the material, these are the same senses that will bring us back to Krishna. We like to eat, we have a tongue, we like to talk, no problem. There's jalebi, gulabs, mahaprasadam, foie, left, right and center, pizzas, you name it, there's gopal, there's rides, there's someone doing catering, there's donuts, there's all sorts of amazing prasadam that is coming out from the devotees. And therefore, okay, let me purify my tongue. I have Krishna prasadam. I like to talk. There's an abundance, and there's a vast literature that we have that we can learn about Krishna and his world, material, spiritual energies, and have discussions about it. There's so much audio. We can listen to Srila Prabhupada, listen to bhajans. We can talk about Krishna endlessly. That is there. And our body is a temple used to serve Krishna. So Prabhupada designed a time-honored program where we purify our body by keeping it clean, where we use our mind, our senses, and we engage all these aspects of our body in Krishna's service. And the same senses that take us away from Krishna, the same senses that we purify and use in Krishna's service. So in one sense we can say it is actually very easy to get back to Krishna because we already have a body, all we need to do is purify our senses and use our senses in Krishna's service. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, any sacrifice performed without regard for the directions of scripture, without distribution of prasadam, without chanting the Vedic hymns and veneration of the priests, and without faith, is considered in the mode of ignorance. So Krishna then starts speaking about the austerities of the body, which includes worshipping the Brahmanas, the spiritual master, worshipping the deities and superiors like the father and mother, being clean, simple, celibacy and non-violence. That is how we practice austerity. We may be shocked that some people are not fond of cleanliness habits. For us, it's second nature. You take your shower every morning and whenever you finish doing your business. It's normal. But for some persons, it may be a day or two. For some, it may be three. And then they'll take bath. Right? And it's like, oh, really? We cannot perceive of that because we have learned the importance of cleansing the body, purifying the body. Right? It changes your energy, it changes your aura. So that is the non-violence. Not only are we trying to be non-violent with other devotees, but with the rest of the world, with other living beings as well. That is an austerity because sometimes people out there act in nonsensical ways. Sometimes want to say things that maybe bite here or there. Or you defend yourself against other calamities that may come your way. So we perform these acts of austerity, celibacy. I won't even get into that one. We know what it is. Try to speak to anyone about celibacy. It's very difficult because everything is designed for people not to control their senses. From what you hear to what you see, it is very difficult. Right, so we practice all these things to purify our senses so we can have our head on straight and serve Krishna. It is very difficult to have loose senses and focus. Try having loose senses and focus on something very important. Back in your schooling years or university, party after party, intoxication, girls, boys, drugs, alcohol, whatever. Try and go to class the next day and focus when your senses are just exhausted. It is very difficult. So all these things we practice so that we're able to focus the mind, so that the mind is tamed, we have control of it, we can chant meditation, we can perform other sacrifices. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. But as I mentioned, there's plenty. We have plenty of literature here that we can repeat. It's not that you read canto for once in your life. Done. Tick. I've done it. I don't need to read it ever again. I can't remember half the things that I've read. So we are constantly and regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, so many classes. Because our memories, once again, it is Kali Yuga, short-lived, always disturbed. This age is already foresaw what would happen, that our qualities would be so diminished that even having a strong memory is going to be a thing of the past. So we have to constantly hear because we are forgetful. We're not shooting ours. We cannot remember our past. We cannot remember what we did 2 weeks ago at this point. So we have to constantly hear. Otherwise, everything is lost and everything is gone. So we purify our speech by purifying what we allow to influence our speech. In the Prabhupada, Prabhupada says, one should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ear. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit and elevate human society. Right, this is Prabhupada to Bhagavad Gita 17:16. That yes, we can speak the truth, but sometimes we should look at the context and still speak the truth. But sometimes we may speak harshly or we may be tone deaf in how we present the literature. For example, I remember, I'll use an example of myself. A few years ago, 10 years ago, my father passed away. I was here, I was in the ashram, and it was out of the blue. I didn't see it coming. So it was a very emotional experience. But of course, I'm trying to keep it together. I taught my bhakti shastri class, went through it, came out. The first person I saw was Anil Prabhu. I told him, very compassionate, very supportive. And then there was another devotee, I don't mention him, because it's another devotee who was a little bit tone deaf. The first thing I was told is, don't be mental, get off the mental platform. We're not the body managing. You should know we teach Bhakti Shastri. And I'm like, oh, here we go. So I understood that message and I attacked it and I'm like, okay, alright, I'm not even going to get into it. But this is like when Prabhupada said, it should be pleasurable to the ear, however, we should try at the same time, you know, back up what we're saying. Yes, Shastra does teach us, yes, we're not the body. Yes, we should try to get off the mental platform. But look at the circumstances and let's not be tone deaf. You could have said that in a different way. So when we speak to people, when we're out there, they are not on the same wavelength. If they're going through difficulties, like Krishna says in the Gita, four persons approached me. Those that are inquisitive, those that are after wealth, those that want knowledge, and those that are distressed. And most of the time, generally, we get the distressed. The very rare soul, the very rare gyanis who will come and say, this book are just very, very rare. Those who seek wealth, they want to make a business out of religion, that is going on, and it is being dismissed, etc. But those who come due to distress, we have to be very careful in how we bring them into the fold, because if we're tone deaf in their distress, we might push them away. So they come from the material pool where there's so much exploitation, so much pain, so much suffering. And then they come here, they want right, that relief, they're coming to Krishna, they're hoping there'd be some answers to explain why is this suffering happening to me, why am I being subjected to this. And if we come with that same lack of empathy, while still speaking the truth, that pushes them away. So we have to look at the contents that these people who are in distress come in and try to use that platform to explain to them how things are in this material world, why this is a perverted reflection of the real thing, and why we are caught up in what we can do to get out of it. So listening with an empathic ear, but also giving the philosophy, is very important in a way that they'll be able to digest, and that is pleasing to the ear. It is possible, but we just have to practice and train ourselves how to deliver in such a way that even a distressed person can understand the highest truth without having any knowledge of Krishna. That if someone is coming, they're distressed, they're suffering, you can talk to them in such a way that it is from Bhagavad Gita, but the delivery is something that they can digest. So that is how we practice austerity of speech. Sometimes in our excitement, this used to happen a lot, and while I was learning how to preach in Cape Town and even here, at first, you know, when I was learning how to preach, I would observe devotees, and then one of them would tell me, okay, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. I observed sometimes when a new person comes, we all get excited, right? It's a new person, five of us on one person, right? Are you chanting? Why are you not chanting? Are you reading? How much are you reading? Are you coming tomorrow? Five people ask you the same question. Over and over again, it becomes like overwhelming. It's like, can I breathe? Right, so all these things happen. So we learn how to administer the medicine. Sometimes we make a few mistakes, but that is how we learn. We need to learn how to administer this medicine so that in our disease state, we can take the medicine and digest it. Otherwise, as soon as we see the medicine, it's like, I don't want it. So sometimes we catch ourselves in that situation. And as for the austerity of the mind, simplicity, gravity, self-control, purification of one's existence. And the Prabhupada says, to make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others. The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. The senses are there, the senses are to be engaged. But we engage it in the service of the Lord, we engage it in higher pleasure. And by pleasing Krishna, as cliche as it sounds, we are also automatically pleased. We cook nice foodstuffs for Krishna. Who's going to enjoy prasadam? Not that that's the mentality we go and we're cooking nice, but we're thinking, I'm going to eat this prasadam, and mama is going to be hungry, and then pizza. That's not how we enter, that's not the mood we go in. But we prepare everything, nice festivals for Krishna's pleasure, nice decorations, nice prasadam, right? We arrange, we make all beautiful arrangements, nice outfits, so that our eyes need to be satisfied too. We look at Krishna and the beauty and we're satisfied. Right, nice kirtan, we like music, we hear nice music, we're satisfied. Krishna gets offered the best foods, and then after that Krishna pleases us by giving us back everything. And we taste Krishna's prasad, Krishna's mercy. And so we are enjoying because of Krishna. So you offer Krishna the best, have a guess what's going to happen. He's going to give you even better. Once Krishna blesses the food, then it becomes sanctified and it tastes. We all know that prasadam tastes different than restaurant food. We all know that. And that's because Krishna has blessed that food. It was prepared with love for him, and with love he gives it back to us. So like that, that is how we perform all these austerities of the body, mind, austerity of speech. But in the end, we become actually satisfied. We become glorified because of Krishna. Same thing happened to Arjuna. Arjuna didn't want to fight in the war. Krishna said, this is going to happen whether you like to or not. You can take the glory. I would like you to actually take the credit because this is going to happen. So just come on in as my friend, as my devotee. Do this as a service because you're going to be glorified for doing the service for me. Right, so whatever it is that we do, we get the benefit because Krishna sprinkles his mercy on it. And that is the most amazing thing about performing sacrifice for Krishna. The best years of my life were in the ashram, the single way. Best years of my life. Wake up, no responsibility, no care, you're not sleeping much, you're jumping up and down on Harinam, you're doing pre-gurus, wet sides, making gardens at the same time, chanting your rounds, wearing a crossways, teaching yoga class, coming back at 10, wake up at 3 and do it all over again. You're exhausted but you're blissful. Right, sacrificing all of that and you get all of that energy back from Krishna because you're trying to use your entire existence, your entire being to satisfy Krishna. So as a way to try to get rid of all the lust that sits on our senses by intelligence, we engage our entire being, the entire Atma is engaged in service to Krishna and all these aspects of ourselves get purified. By being in contact with the fire, we get purified and we awaken to our original self, our spiritual identity. And this is a lifelong career. It's not going to happen in 2 weeks, in 2 months, like we might see on Google. Become self-realized. Self-realization courses, 4 weeks, get certified. Can be a certified self-realized person in 4 weeks. Right, this is lifelong. This is the real, authentic, legitimate. There is a parampara that we follow that blesses us. We are following a system, a scientific system that works at purifying the heart and mind. And by doing that, our senses are purified and we get closer and closer to Krishna. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Attention from the computer.